Our last, but not by any means the least, our presenter is Ms. Alison Ross, who is a clinical project manager with SAIC Frederick Inc., which is a contractor to the Tobacco Control Research Branch within the Division of Cancer Control and Population Sciences at the NCI. Ms. Rose has a Master of Health Sciences degree in Behavioral Sciences and Health Education from Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Please join me in welcoming Ms. Rose.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to start by thanking the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Other Drugs section for sponsoring this important panel session on menthol cigarettes. I'd also like to acknowledge my co-authors on this study, including the lead author, Dr. Deirdre Lawrence, who unfortunately couldn't be here today, but I have several other co-authors, Dr. Pebbles Fagan and Dr. Alton Hart, I saw somewhere out in the audience as well. I'd also like to acknowledge the Tobacco Research Network on Disparities, who inspired and supported the work for this study. I've actually included some flyers in the back if you're interested about trend and the work that has been going on through this research network. You can visit our website at tobaccodisparities.org. Here is our mandatory disclosure slide. I have no disclosures, but Dr. Deirdre Lawrence currently works for Pinney Associates, who provides current consulting services to pharmaceutical companies. However, her work on this study was completed while she was at the NCI. So menthol was first added by accident, in fact, to cigarettes back in the 1920s, but really became part of a marketing effort in the 1950s. And as we heard, the marketing of menthol has historically focused on the natural properties of menthol. So it's refreshing, cooling, kind of natural minty flavor. And industry document research shows that there has been also a history of targeted marketing among youth, women, and racial ethnic minorities. And not surprising, we have seen that younger smokers, women, and racial ethnic minorities have reported the highest rates of menthol smoking. In 2006, menthol cigarettes contributed to about 20% of the market share. So the purpose of this study is to describe current trends in national prevalence rates of menthol cigarette smoking by gender and race ethnicity, and to also identify factors associated with menthol cigarette smoking among gender and racial ethnic groups. We used pooled cross-sectional data collected from current smokers using the last two survey administrations of the tobacco use supplements to the current population survey. Our outcome was measured by the question asking what type of cigarette do you usually smoke, menthol or non-menthol. We excluded respondents who indicated no usual type. We looked at a number of covariates in our models, including sociodemographic factors such as gender, race, ethnicity, age, annual family income, educational attainment. We looked at a combined employment occupation variable. We also looked at marital status, country of origin, U.S. region where they're currently living, and metropolitan status. We also looked at a number of smoking-related behaviors, such as smoking frequency, that is daily or someday smoking, age started smoking regularly, daily cigarette consumption, time to first cigarette in the morning, and other tobacco products. We used Sudan to generate weighted estimates of menthol cigarette use among the current smokers. We then conducted bivariate analyses that were stratified by gender and race ethnicity to determine the covariates significantly associated with menthol cigarette smoking. Those covariates that were significant in the bivariate analyses were then included in our stratified multivariate analyses. So in order to stay within the 12-minute time limit for this presentation, the results that I am going to present today just focus mostly on the sociodemographic and more specifically gender, race, ethnicity, and some of the socioeconomic indicators of menthol cigarettes smoking. And more information is included in our upcoming paper. So first, just to highlight a few of the findings with regards to prevalence, and you've heard some of this already. Consistent with past research, we found that female smokers reported higher rates of menthol cigarette smoking than male smokers. Nearly 70% of black smokers and nearly 80% of black female smokers reported smoking menthol cigarettes. Among male smokers, those with multiple race backgrounds reported the second highest rates of menthol cigarette smoking. And among female smokers, Asian Pacific Islanders reported the second highest rates of menthol cigarette smoking, nearly 40%. For both males and females, young adults reported the highest rates of menthol cigarette smoking, although you can see for females, those aged 45 to 64 also reported comparable rates of menthol cigarette smoking as their younger counterparts. We also found that menthol cigarette smoking was highest among low-income smokers, those who dropped out of high school, and the unemployed. And we also found that across all sociodemographic categories, no matter how you slice the data, female smokers consistently reported higher rates of menthol cigarette smoking compared to male smokers. So I'm going to highlight just a few of the findings from the gender-specific models in the next two slides. So here we can see that females were 1.64 times more likely to smoke menthol cigarettes compared to male smokers. We also see that with the exception of Native American, American Indians, racial ethnic minorities reported significantly higher odds of smoking menthol cigarettes compared to white smokers. And this was true in the total sample among males and females. For the total sample and for males only, younger smokers are significantly more likely to smoke menthol cigarettes compared to those aged 65 or more. And we also found that for the total sample and female smokers only, those with annual family incomes less than $10,000 a year were actually less likely to smoke menthol than those with annual family incomes greater than $50,000 a year. Taking a look at education and employment occupation, we see that among the total sample and female smokers only, those with less than a college degree were significantly more likely to smoke menthol cigarettes, with the exception of those in the 0 to 8 grade range. And then looking at employment occupation, we found that among the total sample and males only, there was a significantly higher odds of smoking menthol cigarettes among the unemployed. The next two slides show the results from our race stratified multivariate analyses. I'm just going to focus today on three population groups, white, black, and Hispanic smokers. In our paper, we also report on Asian Pacific Islanders and American Indians, Alaska Natives. So here you can see across all three racial ethnic groups, females have higher odds of smoking menthol. Among black smokers only, those in the younger age categories reported higher odds of smoking menthol, with the highest odds being among the 18 to 24-year-olds. Among white smokers only, we again see that those in the two lower income categories were less likely to smoke menthol cigarettes compared to their more advantaged counterparts. And then for white smokers only, we also see an association with education of 9 to 11 years and having a 12th or high school degree only and menthol smoking. And then finally, looking at employment occupation, we can see that being unemployed is significantly associated with a higher risk of smoking menthol among black smokers. And for Hispanic smokers, we found that those employed in an office administrative type job were significantly more likely to smoke menthol cigarettes compared to Hispanic smokers working in management professional type jobs. So just to summarize, prevalence of menthol smoking was higher among women than men. We also found prevalence of menthol smoking highest among young adults, black smokers, low-income smokers, those with 9 to 11 years of education only, and the unemployed. Here's a summary of our multivariate analyses. There were some consistencies in the findings across gender and racial ethnic groups. However, there were some differences. So there were some risk factors associated, for example, with education, we found was only significant among female and white smokers. So in terms of next steps, I think these data help to highlight key population groups at risk of menthol cigarette smoking, and efforts to discourage the use of menthol cigarettes could potentially be enhanced by specifically targeting and tailoring intervention or prevention messages among these groups. So we need to be doing more to counter the targeted and unfortunately extremely effective messaging strategies of the industry. Also, within the framework of our own study and the data available, there are a number of other research questions that could potentially be useful for informing such efforts, such as do rates of menthol increase with multiple risk factors? What are the correlates of menthol by gender and race ethnicity, et cetera? There are also a number of research questions to be addressed beyond the scope of this study that can help inform future intervention and policy efforts aimed to reduce the disproportionate burden of menthol cigarette smoking among populations at risk. And finally, I just wanted to end on a more personal note because I have a lot of family members who actually smoke menthol cigarettes, including my own sister, my stepmother, my brother, who also have asthma. So I found Marta's findings to be very interesting. This is a picture of me with my nephews, Alex and Aiden, who I absolutely adore, and they're very excited that I was presenting here today. And Alex and Aiden know about the harms of all cigarettes. However, I still worry about them as they grow up and enter their teenage years. And, you know, knowing that I have family members who smoke menthol, knowing the targeted marketing practices of the industry, you know, I really worry that they're not going to, you know, take a liking to strawberry-flavored cigarettes because those have been banned by the FDA. But my concern is that one day they're going to grow up and want to experiment and might be enticed by the cool, smooth, and refreshing taste of menthol cigarettes. Thank you.
Thank you, Allison. I want to commend all our presenters for keeping to time. Even though I told them, I didn't believe they were going to make it happen. So we have time left for questions and comments. I just like to make a couple observations. Again, like I said earlier, these papers are going to be out next week in their full length. So a lot more than what the presenters have shared this afternoon. There's a couple things. Dr. Davis presented something which I thought could be food for thought for us, as far as people perceiving menthol cigarettes to have health benefits. Something that is in a cigarette could have health benefits is something, you know, for those of us who are working in the public health field, we need to keep in mind, even though we call these perceptions, but in the real world, perceptions is reality to people, and perceptions drive people's choices and influence people's health behaviors, and the groups, according to her research, the groups that are more likely to have these beliefs are blacks, folks with lower education, and folks with lower income. And these are the same groups that are targeted by the tobacco industry. So it's not a surprise that there's a high use, high rate of use of menthol cigarettes in these groups. And finally, when we think about the profile of a menthol smoker, even though this is something that this is an area I've worked on for many years, but some of the research that Dr. Trinidad shared again this morning is making me think maybe we have to reframe the research question. When you think of who is a menthol smoker, other than more likely to be either an African American or some other minority group, when it comes to smoking cessation, or even their smoking patterns, menthol smokers smoke fewer cigarettes on the average, right? And menthol smokers, at least African Americans, they are more, they have a higher motivation to quit. Research upon research has shown that they report a higher level of interest in quitting. They also report, they're more likely to report that they're planning to quit in the next 6 months. And they actually believe that they can quit. So they have a higher level of self-efficacy that they can quit. But then why is it that they're not quitting more? I mean, my research has focused on why they're quitting less. But when you look at all these profiles, if I don't tell you what this group is, if I tell you there's a group that doesn't smoke as much, that's very interested in quitting, that believes that they can quit, and that's planning to quit, I mean, you would tell me that group will more likely succeed in quitting. So why is that not happening? That's the last thought I want to leave us with this morning. And with that, I'll open the floor to questions and comments. Yes.
Just to follow up on what you just said, are there differences in the effectiveness of smoking cessation therapy in menthol and non-menthol smokers?
I think the show is for the presenters. It's not my show this morning, so I'll let them. I can answer that question, but I'll.
You're the expert
on that one.
These are the experts. Now they're saying I'm the expert. The literature is mixed, but most of more recent studies, especially data from clinical trials, where there's a lot of control and selection and treatments are made available, the more recent studies are showing that menthol smokers don't respond as well. They don't succeed as well on a variety of treatments. We've shown where with bupropion and NRT and even with counseling. But there are a couple other older studies that have found no differences. But I'm even surprised why they're not quitting at a higher rate, given the fact that they seem to really want to quit. There was another hand over there. Yes.
Thank you all for the great presentations. And many of you touched on this a little bit. Specifically, my question is around just the next steps around research. But in light of the FDA's kind of focus, with the advisory team's focus on menthol, and in light of that, as well as what you see as some of the next, what would you see as the next main research needs? Some of you mentioned limitations of cross-sectional, so would a logical next step be cohort or initial trends over time? Is that what's needed?
Well, I mean, I'll take a little bit of a stab at that. I mean, ideally, I think we are limited by the cross-sectional surveys, particularly in looking at maybe some of the cessation issues, and it'd be great to get a national, longitudinal study going. Unfortunately, we're a little crunched on time because the tobacco scientific advisory committee has to make the recommendation within the next year. So I think the idea is to work with the data that we have available, which is why we're trying to make use of the national survey data sets through the NCI and the CDC and put forth the data that is available that can help to best inform that decision-making process.
Ideally, there will not be any... Ideally, you will. If there is menthol, you will like to have longitudinal data. There is no menthol cigarettes, you will not be able to have longitudinal data. Only time will tell.
Yes.
Yes, you can.
The question, and I think I'm sorry, that I get this, Craig, is you want to know about demographics in relation to like usage of the different types of services. You know, really, with our research question, we were just we looked at all the different types of quit aids available, and then we did run the models, but we were really focusing more on just like menthol versus non-menthol. There are a few more results in the paper with some of the demographics related to some of the using of just overall. We didn't kind of like narrow it down because we didn't really see differences if you broke out the different types of cessation, but we did look at it overall, and we do have some of the results in the paper on some of the other demographics related to use of cessation services. Go ahead. So like focus group data?
Yeah, I'm
I mean, it was interesting. I just sat in on a bunch of focus groups last week in Minneapolis among low-income smokers, and interesting enough, a lot of them were saying, you know, they really wanted to quit smoking, but then the ones who, so a lot of them had quit smoking for a while and then had come back to it, and almost every single one of them said it was a habit, that they were missing something that they would eat, and then they just felt like they needed to have something in their hands. And for them, they felt like a lot of them had used the patch before, and they were like, yeah, I've got the patch on, but that behavior is still there, and I need something in my hands. And so they were really, a lot of them were just going back to like the behavior itself. It's like, yes, you try to stop, but the behavior was so ingrained for so many of them because they were like smokers for such a long time that they said that was kind of a barrier for them to quitting. Like, they knew of everything that was available to quit, and they had used a lot of them, but they said that behavior was just very ingrained, and it was kind of, they felt that that was a huge barrier to quitting.
Yeah, and that's a very good question you asked. I don't think we completely know why, but we know that the problem is not they are trying to quit. Menthol smokers make as many quit attempts to quit, but they're not succeeding as much. And which raises the question: does menthol make cigarettes more addictive? You know, some of us believe it does. Some research has shown that it does, but not consistently. So that's an area we still need more work, especially qualitative, you know, work. I think, as Gary?
Yeah, thank you all for a wonderful set of papers. I'm glad to see how this topic is getting more interest and the attention it deserves. I'm struck a little bit by how similar this is to the light cigarette issue. You know, the ulcer harm reduction strategies, they will make, certainly the vents make the smoke go down easier. Being a former cool aisle smoker, I know that at least in my experience, menthol makes the smoke go down easier. And certainly in plenty of surveys, people say that menthols taste better and they smoke easier. Shane, you talked about, you know, questions and maybe other national surveys. I would encourage people to think about some of the questions that have been used to sort of unlock the menthol misperceptions and consider those in the, the low tar misperceptions. And consider some of those and looking at the menthol issue, especially in going down easier. And you talked, Paula and others, about, gee, you know, they're more motivated, they know a lot of things, and I think we might have a right brain, left brain thing going on here. I mean, I think in their heads they might know it's better. But low tar, we found, you know, we reported to the original FTC, the FTC hearing in NCI Monograph 7, that low tar smokers and ultralight smokers, they were more likely to want to quit. And yet, the quit ratios were lower, just like here. And I think it might be a similar scenario that we've got head knowledge and then we've got what Lynn Kozlowski calls the indisputable testimony of the senses, that the senses say it's a little better. So it's really two factors going on. Mm-hmm. Let's not focus just on the cognitive rational. I think there's a lot of affective emotional stuff going on too. Jennifer Unger had a nice paper where she found some major differences in perceptions, and those kind of measures might work as well. So. You know, I like everybody, I think the data, there's a lot more data, and even what I've seen today is pretty supportive of increasing my concerns about menthol being in cigarettes. So thank you all very much.
Thank you. Okay, one last burning question. To get more, I would love to see that. I haven't seen it. Anybody knows about it?
I haven't seen anything.
If there is, I mean, who will do it? The industry or? To get men, yeah. Yeah, that's something that needs to happen. I don't think it is right.
I have just a comment.
Yeah.
I just have a general comment too I wanted to make about menthol and cessation and the treatments. And I think one thing, and again, I'm just kind of thinking off the top of my head, but one of the issues is that menthol smoking, again, we've heard, is most prevalent among racial ethnic minorities, for example, who also tend to have lower... who also tend to be light and intermittent smokers. And many of the cessation treatments and interventions that have been developed for heavier smoking. So, I mean, it might, you know, there might be some confounding issues, too, around the light and intermittent smoking that also need to be addressed among menthol smokers.
As a last, maybe very last. There was a hand up there. Oh, she answered the question. Thank you. I'm sure you agree with me that, you know, this was an outstanding group of presenters. Please join me in thanking them once again.